Hi, everyone, and welcome to Televisions, the podcast, an audio companion to the Televisions website and a show made by Anglophiles for Anglophiles. I am Lacey Barger-Miles, and I'm the editor here at Televisions. And joining me, as usual, is my co-host, Miss Annie Vondel.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
Well, I think I sound better than last time.
You're actually doing the intro this time instead of me.
I know. I didn't know that you did it because I didn't actually listen to last week's episode until Mark told me. So I think things are a little bit back more to normal, or as normal as they ever get around here.
Something like that.
I don't know. I have a screaming headache. So if something just bursts out of my head in the middle of this conversation, that is what has happened.
Okay.
I think it's from the paint fumes in my kitchen.
If any random aliens suddenly appear out of your brain, you know, I don't know. I'll just scream in horror and that'll be the end of this podcast.
Talking.
You know, something like that.
See if it has any thoughts on whatever we're talking about.
What are we talking about today?
Well, first off, we are welcoming a new member of the Televisions fam to the pod to talk about our topic today. Megan Vick is joining us to discuss the... very popular in the UK. It remains to be seen how popular it will be here in America. Mr. Bates versus the Post Office. Hi, Megan.
Hi, team. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to whatever this is.
Mr. Bates versus the Post Office is basically so popular. It literally broke records for ITV that had been set by Downton Abbey back in like season 2 and 3.
I mean, I gotta say, I kind of don't, now having seen some of it, we're only talking about the first episode today and kind of like the background of the show and the real life case that it is about. But I've seen half of it. I mean, it's not bad. It's fine. It's good. But the fervor around this is something of a mystery to me.
Well, before we talk about this, I do want to say that this is the first time in my memory that I have actually seen Masterpiece drop everything and change the schedule to insert a show late in the game that they got their hands on in order to get it broadcast in a timely manner. And that, to me, was, like, the sign that this show was that big. Because, like, PBS is, I mean, not that I don't love this place, because, you know, clearly I work at a PBS station. I write about PBS, etc. Been a fan my whole life. But they're not exactly the most prompt of networks when it comes to bringing over shows. And, like, the fact that this was so... This show was out. Right? This show was so necessary. This show was so important that they literally had to shove Maryland down the schedule by an entire month in order to fit it in. You know, like, clearly there was something going on here, so we all had to watch. I've been really, like, curious about what this is. Megan, why don't you, since you are a recapper, why don't you give a little overview of what this show is about?
Okay, so this 4-episode limited series is a sort of dramatic retelling of Alan Bates's campaign against the British Postal Service, because in the early aughts, they deployed the system called Horizon, which is basically like a accounting software slash, but it comes in like its own little box. Like, it's hardware and software is what I'm trying to explain. And the British Post Office insisted that all sub postmasters across the UK use this system. And it was miscalculating all of their like end of month or end of week finances. And it was causing these sub postmasters to go thousands of dollars into debt because they're responsible for paying debts back to the post office. But the post office refused, the British Postal Service refused to recognize that the system was making the mistakes. So a bunch of like ordinary British folks that were just trying to run their own post offices ended up being charged with fraud or going to jail or being bankrupt. Until Alan Bates started getting everybody together and launched a class action lawsuit against the British Postal Service. And that is the story.
This is, okay, this is probably really hard for Americans to understand, because the first time I read this, the first time I read about this series, when they were first putting it together over at ITV, back in, like, I guess it was 2021 or 2022, my first thought was, what the is a sub postmaster? because I had no idea. And that was actually how I learned the post office is a private company in the UK. The British state is the sole shareholder, which sounds really whack, but apparently this is how...
I just can't believe they were like, hey, let's do a whole show about the intricacies of the post office and how its finances work. That'll be an amazing... amazing drama,
right? And it's not even like, and it's, I mean, seriously, the title itself sounds like some kind of weird twee. What was it? Rory called it like a twee English village comedy with like small stakes and a homegrown British heart, and it's really not like that at all. But that's what the title sounds like, and like basically, so the sub, basically, the post office is a private company, and it basically does it so sub postmasters basically they own and operate their own little franchises and they're independent, so it's like a grocery store, except they have to, because it's like a franchise, like a hamburger stand, like they have to use the things that are sent to them by the crown.
It's like a 7-Eleven basically.
Like they have to have, so they had to use this Horizon software. And this Horizon software wasn't working. And like, you know, someone like Alan Bates, who was good at maths, could tell that this software was faulty from the beginning. And he was like, these numbers aren't adding up because this machine is an idiot and this machine is wrong. And but, you know, some of them, like the first episode shows like three, basically starts with three of the sub postmasters who get screwed. And the second one that they show Joe Hamilton is this woman, she's played by Monica Dolan, she's not good at math. And she's totally reliant on this machine that is faulty. And she can't figure out why it's doing this to her. But she doesn't think to question it. Like, it's really painful.
Yeah, she automatically assumes that that she did something wrong, that she somehow lost 2,000 pounds. And it's just like, and also it's like, it's interesting how they do it with Joe, because like when you first meet her, she's on the like helpline to the Horizon people trying to be like, I can't pay, like, what do we do? And you find out, like, this isn't the first time that it has accounted this major loss for her. She's already maxed out all of her credit cards. We're meeting her at the time where she's remortgaging her house in order to pay off what this machine says she owes.
Right? Like, I would have, like, freaked out after the second one. I would have been, like, after twice, I would have been like, no, this is not a thing. And she's just been accepting it. Every time. And that's insane, right? Like, everything about this story is like utterly unbelievable on some level, and yet like so totally believable. Like, when that helpline basically like it's like, oh, so you did it and then it doubled the amount it said you owed. Oh, well, too bad for you, bye. I was like, you have this like moment, I don't know about you guys, but I had this moment of every terrible like customer service representative I've ever like had to deal with. Like, it was so like a flat, like I've been there. Like, I've been on that side of the phone and like,
yeah. And the fact that like they make a point of ending all of the helpline calls with like, but just remember, you're responsible for the balances. Bye.
Yeah.
This is only happening to you, and you're responsible for the balances. Bye.
Yeah. And I don't know. Like, it's kind of, it really blew my mind. Like, how, I mean, I know British television is very, very good at editing for emotion. And I know this because I've watched British reality television, which is always very good at that. Like, they are always very good at tugging at your emotions. And I think the thing about the first episode that really, like, got me was how well, like, even if you don't maybe understand why this story is that important, how how good it is at like attacking your emotions and how good it is at like getting you to sympathize with these people and how terrible this is and how terrible this was for them and how traumatic in a way.
Yeah. And it's also like, I put this in my recap that like when you're telling a David versus Goliath story, it is so important off the bat that like everybody's unequivocally on David's side. And I think that was an even harder task for a show like this because like, Goliath is the post office, and especially like in an American sense, we're always like protect the post office, like because we don't, the system is so different. And so I think this does do a really good job of like something we think of as a service and needs to be protected. And they even mention it like in the pilot episode, like everybody thinks of the post office as being like this big cuddly thing, but it was sending innocent people to prison to avoid a PR scandal. Like,
yeah.
Like, people who had worked for the post office for close to 50 years were sent to prison so they did not have to admit that they bought a faulty machine.
Yeah, and that is mind-blowing on some level.
Is it? It is the year of our Lord 2024. Corporations being evil is not new.
Right, but at the same...
Or particularly shocking.
No, but at the same time, because the post office is thought of as a government thing, I think that's part of it. I think there's also a level...
No, not the government being evil.
I know, but there's
Sorry.
Also like...
My headache is going to make me like such an expletive during this episode.
I'm coming at it Oh, go ahead, Lacey.
Oh, go. You're coming in for what? Do it.
I was going to say, I'm coming at it also from like the American perspective of like, we just went through this thing with the election of how like the post office was almost destroyed by the Trump administration.
Right.
So like, I think especially in America right now, we do have this, like, we need to protect the post office. Like, they're under attack.
Like, it's
we
not supposed
this.
To make a profit. It's the post office.
Yeah, right.
Like but the British system works very differently. It is a private corporation, and B, it is like, it's not just like cute mailman delivering letters. Like, they cause very serious, like irreparable damage to some of these people.
Yeah, I think also because it's also because it's a public-private partnership, right? It's one of these things where, like, and you hear government talk about how great public-private partnerships are a lot of times, and this is what happened when the British system had one of those, that the private part of the partnership wanted to hide the fact that it incompetently bought these crap machines. And then the public part, the government, basically covered up for them and allowed them to basically use their system to hide it. So it basically was the worst of both worlds in a way. Because, you know, it's the government that still, to this day, has not done anything about it. And I think that's the thing that that kind of really made this show such a big deal over there that I'm not sure is going to translate over here.
I don't necessarily think that it does. But I think that's kind of, a shame. I also think, and I would love y'all's take on this, I think while I totally think that Megan is 100% right about like we really need to get the viewers in, you know, a mental place where we're very like on the side of the underdog here. But I felt it took a little too long to kind of get into the meat of the story. Do you know what I mean? Like the first episode ends with I watched two episodes, so I'm like, where does the first episode end?
It ends with a meeting
at Fenny Compton. Yeah.
Yeah. And I just feel like it takes a really long time to get to this sort of class action point, which feels like the propulsive part of the story. And I don't know. I am apprehensive about pacing issues. Let's put it that way.
Mm. I agree and disagree. Like obviously like the my dad's a military lawyer, so weird terminology, court martial. But like the court case is obviously like the main part of it, but I also think like you do need to take the time to make sure people understand what happened. And it's just like, unfortunately, it is a machine and people on helplines, and that is boring.
No, yeah, absolutely. Like this is one of those things where like you're staring at computer screens and it's a computer thing that is wrong. And it's also, and this is another thing that I was not sure.
I also think part of it too is that like the show is very much positioned as like this is a Toby Jones kind of vehicle. And almost everything that has happened to him has already happened. Do you know what I mean? Like, we're starting with him.
Yeah.
Theoretically as like our POV character, but he's already like, he's so over it. He's already quit and like moved to Wales. So like we've missed all of that bit with him.
I can see that. The other thing I think that's actually a little bit of that is Masterpiece's fault, that Masterpiece has, in the same way that it did with Nolly, tried to hang it on the actor that we all know. And I don't think that's helping the show in the same way I don't think that that helped Nolly.
Well, I don't think you're wrong, but that's not just them. He's literally at the center of every promo photo for the show. So,
In the UK, he was not. In the UK, the photos are ensemble photos of the cast.
Well, yeah, but love Toby Jones. He has a very large forehead, but him and his big forehead are in the middle of every picture. I say this with love. I also have a big forehead.
Okay, true. But also, and I think this is I think this is also really important that the that first episode, though, even though Toby Jones, Alan Bates' character, has at that point already quit, I think those three stories are really important to start with because they basically kind of hand us the three different points of view. We have the person who figured out that this was wrong from the beginning. We have the woman who couldn't figure out this was wrong and has gone completely into debt and has had her life ruined. And then we have the guy who trusted the system to save him and it didn't. And I think that I think that's why this first episode may feel a little slow, but that's why I feel like that's why those three were chosen as the three avenues to sort of get us in, because they really sort of like, they gave us the three points of view that would be the easiest for us to get into, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you kind of get the spectrum of horrors that happened with these three people.
And then at the very end, you get the guy who'd worked for the post office for 50 years almost, or whatever it was, 40-something, and had gone to jail. And like, and that's kind of like the thunderclap from like behind you that's like, wait, it's not just these three people. It's not just a few. It's a lot.
I think it's also like I don't know that it did this necessarily as effectively as it did getting everybody on its side, but also showing just like why it was so difficult for these people to find each other was important. Like it took them, this was going on for years before they actually got to Fenny Compton and started working together. And it's like showing that like, oh, well, like they were put in the news as like committing fraud and everybody just assumed that these people were stealing from, because we, again, like if I saw in the news story that, oh yeah, someone was stealing from the post office, I was like, yeah, money launderers, go to jail. Like, and then it took a long time for them to really figure, to put the pieces together and realize that there were so many of them out there. But showing that was tedious.
I also think, and this is something I don't know about you guys, but I didn't realize quite how early this show sort of started, like how this basically was also a story about digitalization. And that didn't quite hit me. I think I watched all four episodes when they first came out before they came over here. I VPN'd them. Shh, don't tell anybody. And it wasn't until I think maybe like towards the end that I realized that this is also a story about digitalization and how this had been a thing where they had basically hired the software as part of a push to digitalize the post office in a way, and that this was a way to push these people into using technology, and that that's part of the point of getting this software and this hardware was in a way like pushing the post office into the digital age, and that that was also why they didn't want to admit that the software was faulty, and that I feel like those first episodes also don't really sort of, if that had been more emphasized, I think, in the beginning, that might have also helped, because it would have more like positioned why it was also hard for them, because it, you know, in the late 90s, early aughts, like we didn't have as much connectivity. The world wasn't as small. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it was the pre-Facebook era. Like these things are, these people are going to jail as Facebook is still like being created and like still only on college campuses. So like, and again, it's hard for younger people to remember what it was like in that pretend, but think of like a like the biggest social media service at the time was MySpace, which is nothing compared to what Facebook and Twitter would eventually become. So it's just like the amount of they can't there was no way for these people to like tweet that they just got in trouble and find other people who had the same experience, that that connectivity was not there.
Yeah. And I feel like that that had that been put more in the forefront in the first episode, I feel like that might have also helped. Anyway, Lacey, you were going to say something because you leant forward, then you leant back.
I was just thinking that I just feel like I've watched a lot of shows recently that have pacing problems, and I am concerned that this is about to be another one. But I've only watched half of it, so we'll see.
I will also note that like the court case stuff definitely is in the back half, and that really is the riveting stuff. That being said, I really do love all four episodes. It's not like Nolly where like I was really frustrated by the first episode and it got better over time.
Here's a spoiler alert for everybody listening out there in the dark. I did not finish Nolly. Free yourselves.
It's okay. You were never going to finish Nolly, just like you're never going to finish Alice and Jack, and we're okay with
that. I am never going to finish Alice and Jack. I am reading Marnie's recaps just for the lulz, but yeah, I will never watch one more minute of that show. I think, and if you have heard my past few episodes, I will probably finish Mr. Bates, which is high praise considering many of the other things I've been forced to watch this spring. I'm just here to tell the people the truth. That's all.
Megan's just kind of staring at us like, what the hell? Sorry, we get like this about masterpiece like shows.
People are sometimes taken aback when they come on the show. They're like, wow, Lacey really hates it. Like, Marnie came on to talk about Alice and Jack with us, and she spent a good, like, 5 minutes sitting there, like, staring at me across the video screen, just looking shocked. And I'm like, no, I'm here to tell the truth. I am the Lorax. I speak for the trees. I feel no inclination to soft pedal things. Let's put it that way.
I haven't watched any of Alice and Jack, but this makes me sad.
Don't. It's so bad. I'm not going to derail a discussion of what I hope is ultimately a much better show. But yeah, Alice and Jack is just delete.
Be thankful you were not the one who won that derby, because good God, all of you wanted that show too. All right. Anyway, so.
I would just like to say that I was meh on that from the beginning and did not want to recap it when you tried to make me, and I am a visionary.
Anyway, I do think that the Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, I do think is also much better served than, say, Nolly, in the fact that that Masterpiece and PBS have been pushing since the beginning how much this is based on a real story and how much these people are real.
You know, what's weird, though, is that Masterpieces or PBS or Masterpiece and PBS, I never remember where the distinctions lie in these things, but they've like made a whole documentary about like the real Mr. Bates versus the Post Office, and for some reason that passeth my understanding, have decided to air it after the show.
Yes, I know, and I don't understand that either. It's airing after the finale.
I honestly get that, because you want people to be invested in the story, and then you can do the true or false afterwards. I get it. I see the vision.
I mean, I guess, but like everybody is just gonna Google it anyway. Like,
well, we are doing an explainer beforehand so that we can help you beforehand, and then you can watch the show. Then you can watch the documentary afterwards.
I do also like that. Also, is why I sort of commend them for spending as much time on the cases and setting things up in this first episode, because it is so Googleable about like, hey, what actually happened? So like, you need a reason for people to watch this show, and that means you need to have them invested in these characters that are probably composites of a lot of different people that are involved in this case, but outside of Alan Bates. So I think that the amount of time they spent on humanizing this situation was well served.
I will actually, no, some of these people are real, like Laura Vanels, who we'll meet in future episodes, actually was a real person. And that is actually based on her. Alan Bates actually does make a cameo in this show, the real Alan Bates. Yeah. I believe he plays one of the other, he plays a postmaster, like a small postmaster in like a crowd scene or something. I think that, you know, the fact of the matter is that this is such a fascinating story in general, and that these sorts of things are the kind of thing that, like, when we say that Masterpiece needs to be doing contemporary stories. You know, we talked about this with Alice and Jack, is that our frustration with Masterpiece not being able to pick good contemporary stories. And that when it does, it picks things like Guilt, or it picks things like Roadkill, or it picks things like Alice and Jack. And I feel like
I'd forgotten about Roadkill.
and yes, I know that this is
Helen McCrory. I love you, but no.
I feel like this, even though it is probably technically a period piece from 2004, yes, 2004 would technically be considered a period piece. This is sort of contemporary, though, like, because, you know, the actual court case is in 2015 and the actual judgment was
some of it's still going on, isn't it? Sort of the fallout.
Yes. The judgment for the judgment for the class action lawsuit came down in 2019. But there are still court cases going on today that Alan Bates is fighting that are happening now. And actually, because of this television show, the government finally actually opened an investigation into the people who were running the post office and giving the franchises and forcing the use of Horizons and the Horizons people back in the aughts to figure out who it is who should be punished, like literally like 6 weeks ago. Like, they only just opened an investigation because this television show caused such an outcry. Like, that's insane. Like, it took a television show to get the British government to do anything.
Yeah. We've had podcasts that have done the same here. But, like, also the power of television. I feel like we've had to defend.
Yeah.
We've had to defend the power of the medium we cover a lot. And it's like, yeah, TV is a source for good sometimes. Not all the time. Most of the time, actually, no. But this time.
Yeah. And I do think that I do think that's why it's important that it came over to PBS. And I think that's why it's important that it came over to PBS in a timely manner. I am afraid.
I just don't think this is going to be the hit they want it to be. I just don't.
I know. And that's actually the thing that actually worries me the most, because they went to, because Masterpiece went to such great lengths to basically blow up the entire schedule, and PBS let them in order to do this, in order to get it here this fast. If it isn't a hit, does that mean they're never going to be allowed to do it again?
Well, not to discount the power of that move, which I do think they maybe should consider on a broader scale, being a little bit more flexible in a similar way. The show it displaced, which we will talk about later this spring, is unlikely to set the world on fire. So I think it's fine.
Yes, that's true. Yes, we will get to Maryland eventually, I'm sure. And I'm sure Lacey won't finish that one either.
It's been a rough spring for me, guys.
This is what she gets for wishing for shows that aren't mysteries.
It's been a rough spring. I don't know. I feel like another thing I don't feel like the show necessarily does very well is there's a lot of characters. I don't think it does a great job in terms of helping you differentiate and or remember who they all are. Like, I'm, as we all know, I am terrible with names. So I don't know any of their names except Joe's. But they're like just different archetypes of things, which is maybe, I suppose, the point. But none of them feel super fleshed out to me beyond the archetype of whatever their particular, you know, the guy that has been trusted the system, or the guy that, no, wait, that's the same guy, you know, he's the one who kept being like, you know, I've got all these receipts, I've done this math on the back of an envelope or whatever, and nothing.
Lee Castleton, yeah, is his okay name.
I could have told me, yeah, it was anything.
It's Will Mellor is the actor. And like
Bob Ross, I don't know.
Well, no, like the same way that like I couldn't remember Joe's name, but I wanted to call her Monica because she's Monica Dolan, and I can remember the actor's name but not the character name. Because I tend to do that,
yeah,
especially if I've seen the actor over and over and over again. And this is very much one of those shows that's filled with that guy, British actors.
Oh yeah. I mean, the cast is really strong. Maybe the crux of this is that Lacey is a monster who should be studied. But like the lady I felt like I should have had like a stronger emotional reaction to like a lady literally stabbing herself over this.
Oh, man.
And I was just like, I barely feel like I know that character. I guess she should get some SSRIs. I don't know.
Oh, that's mean.
I said maybe I'm a monster. But I don't know. Like, I don't, despite the emotional, like, weight of the story, I don't feel a lot of emotional connection to these people as people, if that makes sense.
I mean, honestly, like, Leah Williams is also really easy to hate. So the fact that she plays Paula Vanels, who's sort of like the evil, like, corporate person, really worked. You know, and I really love the fact that, like, you know, Alex Jennings, you know, he plays, he also plays a real life person. He plays James Arbuthnot. And he's, you know, again, very much the kind of person who is sort of like easy to be an evil person. So it works in a way. But like, I couldn't actually tell you who Amit Shah's real name is in the show. I couldn't tell you who Sean Dooley's character's name is. I couldn't tell you who Leslie Nichols' character's name is. That, I mean, you know, she might as well be Mrs. Patmore from... They might as well just refer to her as Mrs. Patmore. Because, honestly, that's who she was. Except, you know, not actually Mrs. Patmore. Just... She was just a postmaster instead. Like, that's, you know, like, that's how... And then that's not, I know there's a level where that's not fair. Yeah.
I also think, now that I'm thinking about this, because I spend, as we all know, a lot of time thinking about myself and my own feelings. And I wonder if part of what I'm reacting to has been the sort of insane hype around this. And I don't necessarily feel like this is a product that, for me, lives up to the, like, oh my gosh, it's like the biggest show of the year. It's big as Downton Abbey. Masterpiece, like, switch the schedule around to put it in there. This isn't a blow your mind. And I'm like, it's good?
I think we also, I think context is important, right?
Yeah. And it's, I had that problem with Nolly too. I was like, I don't know who this woman is.
Yeah. And like for us, like in America, like I think it is like we have to wrap our heads around so much to understand and get into the story, the different, how the postal service works in England, the fact that it's sub-postmaster, and like there's, you're trying to understand so much of the mechanics that British people who watched this did not have to, like they are immediately in it. And it's also like England is going through like a very similar thing that the United States is in terms of our like political system and like frustration with the government and all these things. So to have a story like this where these normal people band together, stood up and quote unquote won, it's still ongoing, but like beat the system. I think that that is like a galvanizing call in this moment in time. And we don't get it because we're like, but like, I try to imagine that like if PBS did an American limited series.
Yeah. Like what would our version of this be?
Stacey Abrams in the, like taking on the government, like the Georgia government for voter suppression. Like, I feel like that might be. Similar, like that's might be like in England it's a bigger deal because like it's like they're these people won against the government in a moment of time where like they feel frustrated and we just keep having the government like knocking us down and keeping inflation going like
right like I could no you know what I can see that like if there was if part of it is also that this is something that he's just passed enough that it can't that it has an ending where a lot of our stuff that we're very frustrated about is ongoing and has not concluded. Like we're in the middle of it, right? Like, you know, most of the stuff that I think that we would want to make, you know, a story about is stuff that like, you know, like Ferguson, that's stuff that's still going on today. Like those are things that, you know, the Black Lives Matter thing then came around again in 2020 and we're still in that now. So it's too recent. You know, we can't make stories about them quite yet because, you know, that is one of the things about the Horizon story being from 1999/2005-ish. You know, even though the court case ended in 2019, it did actually end. You know, so now is the time to make the story, whereas we're not there yet. Like we need to be 5 years on in order to do that. You know, we need a little bit of time. We don't have time and distance yet to make those stories for us. And so I think that's also another thing where like and yes, a lot of people in England also know about this story because it was such a big deal when the post office people won. And like, we didn't even know, I didn't know a single thing about this story until I literally saw they're making a TV show about the post office written by the lady who wrote Tom Jones, starring Toby Jones. And it's a 4-part thing on ITV. And I went to myself, I wonder if PBS is going to pick that up. That looks so PBS-y.
It is peak PBS.
Yes. Like, I seriously, like, wrote a thing I think it was in January when it first broke big on ITV. I was like, why is PBS not picking this up? And then PBS picked it up. So, yeah.
Yeah. It does have heavy PBS feels.
Definitely. Like, when I explained it to people, I'm like, listen, it's a drama about the post office. Of course it's PBS. Like, nobody else would pick it up except maybe BritBox. And BritBox would be like, it's a story about the post office. You know, like, it's not really something, you know, twee English village stuff, as Rory put it. The only thing missing is Agatha Christie's Miss Marple coming through and going, murder!
No, surprise, murder! Random murder.
Hey, it's still early. You know what I mean?
It's true.
Well, as you said, there was a lady who stabbed herself, so there you go. There will be death. Anyway, spoiler alert for those who have not got past episode one.
Oh, wait, did that not happen in episode? Sorry, I may have spoiled people inadvertently. This is why I don't watch ahead, guys.
It's fine. I'd watched all 4 episodes. It's fine. Megan is the only one of us who has managed to keep things spoiler-free because she is much more professional than either of us, which is why we hire professionals around here so somebody can be.
We're all doing our best is what's happening.
We all are doing it. Well, and also the other thing that is a bit weird about the show, I think, is that it's kind of hard to talk about. Do you know what I mean? Like, I kind of don't know what to say about it.
Yeah, this is the same problem we had when we talked about Nolly. Like, where do you talk about a show like this? Because it's only 4 episodes. And it's sort of hard to sort of gauge where to put an episode talking about it is. Like, with Nolly, we went with the first episode, and that was clearly not the best place. But honestly, like, we didn't really have a better place to put it. And here, like, I feel like putting it at the first episode is the right place, because there are people who have probably already binged all 4 episodes. Who have Passport and who did that already. There were probably people who VPN'd it like I did back in January and have watched all 4 episodes already. And there are people who are going to watch week to week and now know that there's going to be at least one death and are kind of, you know, prepped for it.
Look, I didn't say anybody was dying. I just said someone stabbed themselves.
Okay, see? There you go. And now people can gird their loins for it. So there we go.
I feel like we have this debate in American television a lot about whether something should be a weekly release or a binge. And obviously, binge is not an option for Masterpiece Less CBS, but I do think that this would have been better as an all-in-one drop.
I really agree with that, actually. Mm.
Yes. And I think that's the thing, is that that's why, you know, we have PBS Passport as like the membership benefit that you get with Mug and Tote Bag, where binge is sort of the benefit that you get, but only members get that. And, you know, that's not something that anyone else gets. And it's not really it's not really an option otherwise. And honestly, like, I do think this would have been better as a binge for Americans, because then you get all the information at once. But I don't know how else you would do it, except, you know, there's no other way. And honestly, I don't think that's, I think that's just the way it has to be. You know, there's just some things where, like, old-fashioned television just has to, you just, yes, it would be nice to have binged it, but most people are just going to have to watch it week to week, and that's just that.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, this is a limited series, so there's no season 2 or anything like that. But would you like to see more of this type of thing come over in terms of contemporary British shows?
I am in favor of anything that is not Alice and Jack. I'm going to spend the rest of 2024 just dumping on Alice and Jack. Just get ready, people. But I do, I mean, I think it's at least like, this show, I can see that it very much fits the PBS brand, and it is timely in the sense that it did air quite recently in the UK. Certainly, the gap is smaller than a lot of the things that come over on PBS. So I approve of that.
It was the January 1st drop on ITVX, and all 4 episodes... Actually, Just to note, ITVX dropped it as a binge on January 1st. So it was the New Year's Day watch for a lot of Britons. And then it aired weekly on ITV1 starting on January 1st. So it basically ran through January. Megan?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, to your point, this is so PBS. So it feels like even though it was, like, contemporary, it didn't do anything to like expand the PBS brand or like do anything like groundbreaking. So like, I mean, and I'm saying this, like, I enjoy the show, I'm having a good time, I'm looking forward to the next three episodes, but I feel like if they are going to bring over more contemporary, it would be nice to see them like push the envelope a little bit and sort of like stretch to see what the PBS brand means and like what does that like prestige type of television mean in a context lens if Alice and Jack is clearly not it. Again, I'm saying that someone who hasn't seen Alice and Jack, I'm just copying Lacey at this point.
I have gotten some incredibly funny emails from readers during our Alice and Jack episode. I was like, I feel like I'm insane. Please email me your thoughts on Alice and Jack. And I have gotten some hilarious responses from folks who also hate Alice and Jack correctly.
The thing is that I do think that Alice and Jack is a right church, wrong pew issue where you're right. Pushing the envelope on contemporary drama is something Masterpiece needs to do. Alice and Jack is just pushing it in completely the wrong direction. And I actually think that you're right. This is the contemporary thing that doesn't push the envelope. And that is, this is contemporary safe in a way.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't, like I said, I don't think that this, despite its wild success in the UK, I don't think this is going to be the huge hit that Masterpiece wants it to be. I think it's a good drama. I think it's a completely fine show. And I think it really like sits square in the Venn diagram of what PBS viewers want to be watching. So I think that's not nothing, but it's definitely not like
this is no Downton Abbey season 3 Christmas special.
Wait, can we just take a second to just shout out to Dan Stevens for having the weirdest career post-Downton and just killing it. I love him so much. He's in the new Godzilla movie, and I love that for him.
I know! Man, who saw that coming as a hit? Everyone I know thought that thing was going to flop.
Whatever. I think we're going to see it tonight, actually, because I unironically and unabashedly love Godzilla and kaiju movies, and I don't need it to be art. I just need them to fight.
Okay.
Yeah. People go into Godzilla movies with too many expectations. I was like, is there a giant lizard? Does he stomp on stuff? Done.
Like, what do you want from this? And I just, right? And Dan Stevens, too. Like, you get everything.
Yeah. Megan, you're going to see Monkey Man, right?
Oh, yeah, give Dev Patel a rom-com, please.
Yeah. I'm on the campaign. I want a Dev Patel and Hathaway rom-com. It's my dream.
Ooh, indoors. See, this is what this show is like so hard to talk about as a show, so we keep like running off the rails. Which is not abnormal, but
I would like to see Dev Patel and Toby Jones in the post office could be involved.
They could meet at the
Patel
post office.
Dev Patel and Toby Jones, you've got mail remake.
I'm there.
I'm not going to pretend like I wouldn't watch it. And then Dan Stevens could be in it in some way.
There we go.
Yeah. He could be like the third leg of the love triangle that's keeping them apart. We did it.
Like the weird neighbor. There we go. Yeah, I don't know.
And I think that might be the episode.
This has just become something else now. But I will say, since so many of you have sent me your Alice and Jack thoughts, I would love to hear from listeners about what you guys think about Mr. Bates. Like, do you think it was overhyped? Is it working for you? Like, is this more of the sort of contemporary fare you would like to see on PBS versus my most hated show of the year? And I don't know, like I would like to know how people are reacting to it sort of like in situ, if you will, because I feel like if you just turn on PBS and like this is on and you haven't like experienced the hype train of this, I think your reaction to it might be a little bit different. I don't know. I'm interested to see. So email us. We're at televisions@weta.org. Yeah, I think that's probably our show. This is just a mess. I'm sorry. Probably we should have done this episode a little later in the run, but this is what you get. So we love you. Thank you for listening. Megan, thank you for joining us for this.
Happy to be here. What a fun time. I learned so much.
Thank you.
And we'll have you back for Call the Midwife.
Oh, yeah. That'll be fun.
I'll be back later this month.
I need to watch that. I haven't watched it yet.
I have so many, like Annie knows, I'm coming,
coming in hot with an agenda.
I have an agenda.
Here for it.
I have declared one character to be my absolute nemesis, and I'm going to tear him to shreds.
Oh, I'm so about this. That's actually made me excited to watch Call the Midwife now. Maybe that's what I'll do my afternoon. Anyway,
we have a character to hate this season, and it's working for me.
Is it not Sister Monica Joan?
It is not Sister Monica Joan.
Oh my god, small spoiler, she has a thing in this week's episode that is like actually so cute and made me so happy.
She's eternal, Sister Monica Joan. Anyway, so I could stop us talking about this. Megan, thank you for being here, and tell people where they can find you online for more of your hatred or love or whatever.
Okay, well, I am recapping Call the Midwife and Mr. Bates for Televisions, but you can find me on X, formerly known as Twitter.
I refuse to call it X.
At Meggo Inc. MEGGOINC. I have a lot of opinions about TV and K-pop. That's where I am.
Get her to tell you about Hallmark shows.
I will. Hashtag get in the water.
I've only learned about this show with the time traveling pod because of Megan, and I need to watch it. Anyway, Annie, you're up.
You can find me at Annie Bundle basically everywhere on the internet. I am the associate editor here at Televisions, and I also freelance around the web at NBC, MSNBC, and Primetimer, and eventually I'll get back to pitching to Paste, I promise. Now that they have AV Club and Jezebel and like all of my favorite sites. I mean, seriously, I just need them to pick up the rest of Geo Media and just glue them all back together. Cold paste, for heaven's sakes. You can do it, I'm sure. Cobble them all back together. Anyway, so that's basically me. Google me. I'm Annie Bundle because I'm the only one.
Huzzah. I am Lacey MB on all of the social media sites that let you pick your own profile. And I write about a lot of things here at Televisions and around the web, but I'm always yelling about something. A lot of the times it's Good Omens or Star Trek related, so, you know, strap in. If you don't want any of that business, the site and the pod are on social media at Televisions Blog, all one word, on Facebook, and at televisions.org, where you can read all of the tremendous amounts of content that we are putting out each and every day. If you like the stuff we're making, you can click on that donate button up top to help us keep producing more of it and get access to the aforementioned PBS Passport, where you can watch all of Mr. Bates right now, among a whole bunch of other things that are just too long for me to run down by right now. But suffice it to say, there are many, many options. That's our show. Thanks for joining us as always. It was spring here in the DC area, and now it's not. We had fall spring, so that was great. Now it's really cold. There was an earthquake.
Rude.
In New York. I don't know.
Rude.
It's a wild time.
It was in New
Whatever.
Jersey.
It's a wild time in these earth streets, I guess. Hope everybody enjoyed the eclipse and all of the spooky things that probably implies for the rest of the year. And I don't know. As always, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and we will see you next week. Thanks for listening.